They did not find the body. That's what we expect to hear tonight because we're used to this story. But notice what Luke records immediately after that. He says they were perplexed. And so they encounter two men in dazzling apparel. And what do they say? They say, "Remember how he told you." When? While he was still in Galilee, that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified and on the third day rise. So yes, they were told this before. In fact, in the Gospel of Luke, he records three times in his ministry, at least three times, he told them very clearly what would happen. Yet here they are looking at the open tomb and they're perplexed. Why could they not receive what he already plainly told them, even after it had unfolded before their very eyes? I think it's fair to say this, that their condition is much like ours. They've encountered a world, a fallen world, that has many unexpected evils. And expecting the worst is our way of defending ourselves. It becomes a way of life. In fact, this was not only the case for those who encountered, these first ones who encountered the open tomb, because even after that early church had been baptized into this belief of Christ's death and resurrection, St. Paul takes the entire New Testament, all of his writings, and all the writers of the New Testament, is all about helping the church to receive the fact of the resurrection. Receive it how? In such a way that we're not simply expecting evil, but we learn to expect blessing. And that takes an entire reorientation of worldview to expect God to fulfill his character. Now, when St. Luke quotes Jesus as early in his ministry, saying that this would happen, he points to the prophets and the Old Testament figures who said this must be so. And we heard in many ways how this is true from our readings that led up to this gospel. We heard the account of Genesis, and we know after that was the fall. But even before then, in the Exalted, what was chanted for us? Oh, happy fault. Oh, happy fault, that fall that would bring us to redemption. And how is that fulfilled? Even the death of Isaac was replaced by the ram. Even the slavery in Egypt was delivered through the Red Sea. And even the exile after God's people refused to believe was vindicated as God's people were brought back and his name was glorified once again. But there are other prophecies that pointed to this very fulfillment that these first people encountered, but they were not able to receive it. What was the problem? They could not receive it because they couldn't perceive it. Their imagination was stunted by this fallen world, and even Jesus' predictions did not overcome that. But then what do we have? Two men in dazzling white, and they reminded them of what they heard, and that was the beginning. The worldview began to change. So let's ask a question. I'm going to ask a question that was posed by Father Carlton Jones, who some of you know, a Dominican priest who has ministered here. He said, "What if in God's providence there was a world instead of unexpected blessings?" And who in this world looks at our current world that way? He said, "It's really only the innocent, the childlike, who look at the unexpected and anticipate good things typically to come from them. But let's ask another question. Who in your life have you known who embody this disposition? Is it the young and naive? No. After the age of 6, let's just say, here's where we find it the most. It's the older people, the mature people, the people who have deep waters, who have experienced pain, but have sifted those experiences through prayer and through scripture, and have indeed found that God's blessings follow those crosses that are offered to God. In my mind's eye, I'm picturing an older religious sister in a white habit, a Dominican sister. And I'm imagining talking, complaining about the trials of my own life and seeing her nod her head understandingly, looking into my eyes. But she refuses to call me a victim. Instead of sympathizing with my woes solely, she says, "Yes, I wonder what good God is going to bring out of this." This is a change of worldview that is demanded by the facts that we have recounted today. How do we receive it? Yes, it comes from sifting our experiences through prayer and scripture. But it also happens when our imagination is kindled. Do we need 2 men to show up in dazzling apparel, angels, to tell us, to remind us of what we've already heard? We have something greater, and that is here today. We have a liturgy that has flowed from that experience, that has been created by those who have experienced the resurrection and the fact of their lives. And in our first prayer that we prayed, as before we lit that candle outside this church, we said, "For those who celebrate the liturgy in this manner, they will have a sure and certain hope." If we're able to embrace this moment, then this is a liturgy that's been created by those who have laid down their lives for Christ, who are ready to lay down their lives and created words that pointed out to say, "This is normative for us. We are willing to give all because Christ gave all." Just like the apostles who fled from the cross, but immediately after they beheld the resurrection, were willing to give everything for him. Because this church exists, we know that the resurrection is one of the most sure facts of human history. And we have this witness of the imagination kindled. So the challenge for us, the call for us, the privilege that we have tonight is to let this truth permeate our lives so that we live it now and that we proclaim that sure and certain hope in all the circumstances of a fallen world.